You're listening to Teaching from Midtown Fellowship, a Jesus-centered family on mission in Columbia, South Carolina. If you're interested in finding out more about us, our family of churches, or how to partner with us, go to midtowncolumbia.com.
All right, good morning. My name's Alan. I'm one of the pastors here. Glad to hang out with you today. I want to first start off by saying Happy Father's Day. Can we give it up for fathers? Dads, I just want you to know that we are thankful for you and the role that you play in your family. I hope that today is a blessing for you and that it is a reminder that you are to be a blessing to your family every day of the week. I do, like most holidays, just want to say, you know, Father's Day can mean many things to many people. Sometimes Father's Day can mean gratitude and thankfulness. But there are, for some people in the room, Father's Day can be sadness and grief because your dad's not here with you. For other people, you might feel hurt or pain because your dad failed you in many ways. And I think there might even be some who long to be a dad and that has not been fulfilled yet. And so what I just want to say to each and every one of you, you're all welcome. And we want to come as we are. And so we're thankful that you're here today, that we get to be the church together, no matter where we're coming from. So last week, we began a series on fruit of the Spirit from Galatians chapter 5. This summer, we're going to be working through those different fruits. We're not necessarily going sequential. So we talked about love, but today we're going to talk about patience. And I don't know where you are or what you think about patience, but in some ways, patience has a little bit of a negative connotation. And what I mean by that is, I don't know if anyone has ever warned you, don't pray for patience, right? Because there's only one way to get it, and you might not like the way that you get it. And so there's this idea that gaining patience is not worth the effort. But what I want to highlight today is the beauty of patience, how God is so patient and gracious to us, and how wonderful it is when patience exists in our relationships. So we're going to be, again, in Galatians chapter 5, if you want to turn there with me. We're going to start in verse 16. I know we read it last week, but I just want to use it to kind of set up what we're doing, where we're going, and how we're going to talk about patience today. Galatians chapter 5, starting in verse 16. But I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. For the desires of the flesh are against the Spirit, and the desires of the Spirit are against the flesh. For these are opposed to each other to keep you from doing the things you want to do. So there's a setup that Paul is making. There's two competing things that are happening. You can walk by the Spirit, or you can gratify the desires of your flesh. They do not work together. They're in opposition. They're fighting each other. And so today, what I actually want to do is I want to take one of these desires or works of the flesh in particular and contrast it to patience. So picking back up in verse 19, it says, for now the works of the flesh are evident, sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, fits of anger, rivalries, dissensions, divisions, envy, drunkenness, orgies, and things like these. I warn you, as I warned you before, that those who do such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. One of the things we were talking about in my life group last week was growing up in the church I grew up in, we put a pretty big emphasis on the start of these sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality. And we kind of like left out the middle section and got right back down into drunkenness, orgies, and things like that. And we kind of left out that middle section that is just all about relationships, sins against each other. And I just wanted to highlight those things matter. Like the warning is, I warn you, as I warned you before, those who do such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. Like these are all big deal. Goes on to say at verse 24, and those who belong to Jesus Christ have crucified the flesh, all those relational sins. We're putting them to death and its passions and its desires. So I don't want us to miss these relationship sins that come up, these desires and these works of the flesh that prevent us from being and living in right relationship with each other. The one in particular I want to talk about, it says, now the works of the flesh are evident, and you skip on down, it says, fits of anger. And then verse 22, but the fruit of the Spirit is patience. We're going to contrast the two, fits of anger versus patience. The reason I want to focus on these in particular is both of them, the Greek words, are the same root word. So they kind of play off each other. So I want to start off by defining fits of anger. The Greek word for fits of anger is thumos. Thumos, it means passion or heat, anger that boils up and soon subsides. So the image of boiling up quickly and then also quickly subsiding is kind of a key for us to understand what this word means. There are other words for anger in Greek. One in particular is orgizo, and it's more about anger and wrath. It's more sustained. It's directed towards someone. This is more, thumos is more quick, volatile, meaning it comes and goes like the wind, meaning at times these fits of anger, thumos, are very trivial. And so kind of to help clarify, when we're talking about fits of anger, thumos, what I'm really talking about, or what the Bible's really saying, is irritability or edginess or being easily provoked. So sometimes we preach out of strength, and sometimes we preach out of weakness. So let me tell you a quick story about thumos and me. So my family, we've got, for Christmas, one of the things we gave our kids, I got three kids, was we did passes to Carowinds. We love to go ride the rides. Myself and my oldest in particular, we just start off at the Fury. We ride it about three times. That's the big one. Big hill, big drop. Love it. Hands up. You know, the goal is either in the front or the back, whichever one is going to be the most extreme. So we're doing all that. One of the other things we love about it is once you're done with the roller coasters, you can go to the water park. And so when you're hot and you're sweating, then you go cool off at the water park. They have great slides, all that kind of stuff. All that's irrelevant to my story. But you know me now. So we were getting food. We're all laid out there. We're still a little hot, a little bothered, a little agitated, having a great time. I'm in line to get food. And underneath there, it has like this family chicken finger basket. And I was like, that's perfect. That's what I want. Again, I'm at the water park. And so I go and I was like, I want the family basket. And they're like, well, you need to see your season pass. I was like, it's on my phone. They're like, well, you have to go get your phone. I was like, I'm at a water park. Why would I have my phone on me? I'm getting wet. This doesn't make sense. I don't understand this. It doesn't matter. You need to go get it. I was like, do I get a discount if I go get it? No. Then why do I need it? I don't understand. This makes no sense to me. All right, well, if I go get my phone, what happens next? Do I have to get in the back of the line? Yeah, I'm sorry. You have to get the back of the line. And I'm just like losing it. It's just like, there's no logic here. I don't understand what we're doing. So naturally, I turn around. Hey, everybody, if you are getting the family meal, go get your phone, because if you don't have it now, you have to go back. And it's a stupid rule. So I walk off and I'm just like, get my phone. I get in line. I kid you not, y'all, in the back of the line. Hey, if you don't have your phone, go get your phone. They have this stupid rule. La, 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 la. And I'm just not handling myself well. And I get up there and I just kind of like throw my phone down. I was like, I got my phone, you know? And it's thumos. Like, I was just irritable. It's like I was pitching a fit like a toddler does. Or have you been around a hormone-crazed teenager or a grumpy old man or better not a cultural icon, a Karen? You know, like I was out there. I was pretty, you know, it's not my favorite thing to admit from a stage. How quick I can get to my inner toddler, how quick I can become a teenager, a grouch, or a Karen. There are times in my life it feels like I go from 0 to 60 in the blink of an eye. But maybe some of the ways I've realized it for me is I'm actually driving about 55 miles an hour, and it just doesn't take much more to go to 60. So the idea of being marked by thumos, it's somebody who's hypersensitive. They're the kind of person that you feel like you might have to walk on eggshells around. someone who is easily bothered, easily offended, and they make you pay for whatever perceived slight or wrong. These are people who are hard to like, they're hard to be around, they're hard to be in relationship with because they're concerned for themselves and they are quick to be in opposition to anything that interferes with them. Thumos. So sometimes thumos looks like quick-tempered, short-fused. Sometimes it can be a hothead who pops off, but it can take other forms. This idea, fits of anger, is not just outwardly. Some people, they rage inwardly, and their irritability, it shows but when they withdraw from people, when they withhold affection, when they give the silent treatment, or they shut down. One of the guys on teaching team said, when I'm irritable, I don't really lash out, but I do withhold acts of kindness. So I got three quick diagnostic questions for you to just gauge your own irritability, your own thumos. So, you know, I think it's easy. You can recognize irritable people, and you could easily say, this sermon is for someone else, but I don't want you to do that. I want you to deal with your own irritability. I don't want you to just see it in someone else. I want to see it in ourselves. So the first question is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how easily do people get under your skin? Just self-diagnosis. How easily are you easily provoked with a reaction ready at hand? Would you describe yourself as more of a placid person who's not very easily irritated? Or on the opposite end, are you simmering, just waiting to boil over? Second question, how do you express your irritability? Are you quick to snap at your kids? Or do you react more internally? And rather than snap, you withhold affection. Do you withdraw from your wife, or do you insult or cut down your husband? How often do you give your friends the silent treatment, or do you gossip behind their backs instead? Do you withhold love and affection, or do you attack with your words, tone, and volume? Are you passive aggressive? Do you attack with verbal jabs? Do you pout? How do you display your irritability? We all do it differently. And what I just want us to realize is it's not just the person who pops off at the mouth that deals with this. All right, the third question is, what triggers your irritation the most? When are you the most impatient? So how irritable are you? How do you express your irritability? And what are the patterns of it? What sets you off? Is it driving in a car, waiting in a line? Is it at work? Is it at home? Is it your kids? Who is it? Is it people that aren't self-aware? It can be lots of things that provoke us. I was listening to a podcast about the psychology of money and how to invest. I'm getting older, so I'm trying to learn more about that kind of stuff. And the guy, he referenced Charlie Munger. If you know who he is, he's a business partner with Warren Buffett. He got a lot of money. And he kind of talks about cognitive biases and how they impact his investment strategy. And the one that kind of caught my attention was called fundamental attribution error. And the definition pulled out of a Harvard Business Review, the fundamental attribution error refers to an individual's tendency to attribute another's action to their character or personality while attributing their behavior to external situational factors outside of their control. In other words, you tend to cut yourself a break while holding others 100% accountable for their actions. So I'll give you an example. This may or may not be true of me. Someone is running a yellow light when I want to turn. Naturally, I yell out, "Come on, dude, what are you doing? Are you kidding me? How can you be so selfish?" Versus, I'm running a yellow light while someone else is waiting to turn. It's fine. I have the right of way. I need to get somewhere fast. I'm in a hurry. It's not my fault. And you can just see, same action, different interpretation. Because I give myself a break. I have a legitimate excuse, a reason for my circumstances are the reason I'm behaving this way. You, my friend, the reason you behave that way is you have a character flaw. I'm a good person who did a bad thing. You're a bad person doing bad things. And we can think like that. And you can feel that. And maybe you have your own examples. But here's what I'm telling you. If this is our mindset, you will not be a patient person. Because you're never giving anyone the benefit of the doubt. You're assuming their motives. And you're applying their actions to their character. It's not charitable, it's not loving, it's not kind, and it's definitely not patient. And so one of the summaries, the way I would say it is, I am most irritated by people and circumstances that prevent me from doing what I want, when I want, and how I want. And I think most of us might be irritated and deal with irritation when people or circumstances prevent us from doing what we want, when we want, how we want. Because for me, maybe for us, my highest value is me and my own self-interest. And therefore, I don't make space for people. I think another reason that I can be impatient and angry, whether it's conscious or unconsciously, is because there are times I just don't trust God and His timing. As in, when life is not what I want, when things are not turning out the way I want, when God had not delivered in the way that I thought He should or how I hoped, my irritability increases. When my circumstances aren't what I want, my irritability increases. I'm simmering, I'm on edge, I'm waiting for something to make me boil over. In life group and through confession, I've learned that when I am irritable, I have something off inside of me. And I have to deal with that. Because what happens in my irritability is I react inappropriately or in proportionate to other people's actions. Because I'm irritable and it just overflows. My level of frustration doesn't match the situation. And so I would say my irritability can be traced back to a lack of love for people and a lack of trust in God. Thumos, irritable, edgy, not fun to be around. Versus the contrast, fruit of the Spirit is patience. So the Greek word is makrothumia. It means patient towards others, forbearance, long-suffering, slow in avenging wrongs. Patience is the combination of two Greek words, makro, which means long, and thumia, which is just a derivative of thumos. So long to boil over. It's a long time for you to become irritated. Long fused instead of short fused. So it just takes the same word, fits of anger, thumos, versus patience, long, taking a long time to become irritated. I don't want you to equate patience with indifference or apathy. So in no way, mishear me. I don't want you to think I'm saying sit back, relax, stop being so uptight and serious. That's not what I'm saying. In fact, indifference is a counterfeit of patience. It's a counterfeit in that it can look like patience, but it's not the real thing. Keller even calls indifference a mild form of hate. He says, you see, an indifferent person may look patient and say, it's none of my business. What that means is, I don't want to get involved. It's a lazy way out. You look very patient. But what you're really saying is, that's not my problem. That's your problem. It's none of my business. That attitude, which some of us have down very well, either we've learned it from other people or it's just in our temperament, is not patience. It's indifferent. And indifference is a mild form of hate. Romans 12:11 says, do not be slothful in zeal, be fervent in spirit, serve the Lord. Titus 2:14 says, who gave himself for us to redeem us from all lawlessness and to purify for himself a people for his own possession who are zealous for good works. Patience does not in any way refer to indifference. In fact, patience means that you do not lose heart with people. You persevere patiently and bravely, enduring misfortune and troubles, patiently enduring, bravely enduring, bearing the offenses and injustices of others. Patience is to be mild and slow in avenging. It is to be long-suffering. Patience is not a lack of care. Rather, it is a means of care. It's not a lack of care. It's a means of care. To walk in the Spirit is to be patient, to slow to irritation. One of my favorite examples of patience is something that we teach in our premarital counseling. We go through a book called When Sinners Say I Do. And it's basically the whole book is how do you deal with sin in relationships? It just happens to use marriage as the example. So it's incredibly helpful, incredibly wonderful. But one of the chapters, it brings up this idea of forbearance. And it's one of the most beautiful things to be a part of a marriage that has forbearance. And the idea behind forbearance is a predisposition towards grace and forgiveness. It's a predisposition towards grace and forgiveness. So my wife and I, one of our goals is to forbear with each other. And what that means is we give space for each other. We don't actually confront every sin issue that arises, because honestly, that would be terrible and no one wants it. So we forbear. I know my wife's weaknesses and she knows my weaknesses. We don't always talk about our weaknesses, because that would not be fun at all. We forbear. It doesn't mean, forbearance does not mean in any way that we don't confront. We do. We confront each other more than anybody else in the world, because we're around each other more than anybody else in the world. It doesn't mean we don't confront. It also doesn't mean we put all the sins that bother us and irritate us into a bag for the next time we fight. We forbear. It's a disposition towards grace and forgiveness, and we make space for each other. One of the things that I've seen in my marriage that I value so much is there are times where we are more irritable than others. Circumstances aren't good. Life isn't what we wanted. And in our household, our goal is to increase our forbearance so that when the other is irritable, we give space for them. And that's this whole idea of patience with each other, that we have space for each other, that we have grace and a disposition towards forgiveness for each other. 1 Corinthians 13, the famous passage on love, read at a lot of weddings. It tells us that the very first characteristic of love is patient. And if you were here with us last week, we talked about love as agape. And that makes sense if agape means radical self-giving love, a love that is not committed to another, a love that is so committed to another person that they will do anything for them, a person who serves with purely unselfish motives, not hoping to get anything out of it, but simply wants the other person to flourish. Agape love, of course, love has a high boiling point. Of course, love has a long fuse. Of course, love is not easily provoked. Of course, love is slow to irritation. Of course, love makes space for people. Of course, love forbears. And so as we talk about growing in patience, what we're talking about is growing in love and taking our eyes off of our own self-interest and putting on the interest of others. Exodus 34:6 is an incredible passage to examine God's character and how patient he is. It's a defining characteristic of who God is. This is the character and nature of God straight from himself. So the context is Moses is with God up on Mount Sinai, and he asked God in Exodus 33:17, it says, "Lord, show me your glory. Show me who you are. Reveal yourself to me." And in this self-revelation, God is actually, it's actually one of the most repeated verses in the whole Bible. It's over 10 times. It's a characteristic. It's one of the major ways that God, other than the incarnation of Jesus, it's one of the major ways that God reveals his character to us. So Exodus 34, 6 says, "The Lord passed before him and proclaimed, 'The Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness.'" God is slow to anger. He is abounding in steadfast love. Our default view of God in the Old Testament may be a God who's full of smite, as if he's waiting from heaven with a lightning bolt for someone to mess up. "Aha, I knew it. You are smited. I'm after you." But the reality is that is not who our God is. God is slow to anger. The word "slow to anger" is expressed in Hebrew as "long of the nostrils." It's a good description. But the idea behind it is when someone is angry, he flares his nostril. There's a facial expression, like a raging bull. And what it's saying is God's nostrils take a long time to flare. He is patient. He is slow to anger. And you can see that all through the book of Exodus. If you go through the book of Exodus, you see God's patience on display. It begins with God's people, the Israelites. They're living in slavery. God shows up in a bush, and he's calling Moses, "Hey, come lead my people out of slavery." God shows up in a bush. Do you know how Moses responds? I don't know if I can do it. I'm not really good at public speaking. Send somebody else. God stays patient. He gives him a helper, Aaron, and they go. God does his thing with some plagues. The Israelites are delivered and brought out of Egypt and into freedom. Yay, hurrah, they are set free. But immediately, what do? They start complaining. "We're hungry. This is not the way we want to live in the desert. Maybe we should just go back to Egypt. Life was better." God stays patient. He sends them bread from heaven and water from a rock. Amazing. They celebrate? No, they complain. The bread's bland and boring. God stays patient. He calls Moses up to meet with him. They meet together for a long time. God is outlining. He's giving them the law, the whole thing. He's telling them how to be a people. As soon as Moses comes down from the mountain, they've collected all of their gold and they've made a new God for themselves, a golden calf, and they're proclaiming, "This is the God who brought us out of Egypt." God stays patient with them. God calls Moses back in Exodus 33. And this is where he declares, "I am slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love." Our God is patient. And if you just trace God's action with his people from Old Testament to New Testament, from beginning to end, you see a patient God who is slow to anger. He is patient with us when we rebel, when we revile, when we mock, when we scorn, when we reject. He still forbears. He makes space for us. And he's abounding in steadfast love. When God says that he's abounding in steadfast love, he's saying that he is loving and generous with an enduring commitment. It's a promise to keep loyal because of deep personal care. And the whole motive is not rooted in the value or the merit of the other person. In fact, God's love is actually an expression of his character. God is committed to a people who are not committed to him. His faithfulness and love to them is rooted in his character, not theirs. God's love for us, his steadfast love, is an expression of his character and his care for us. It's not rooted in our character. It's rooted in his character. I love the way that Pastor Dane Ortlund says it. He says, "Unlike us, we are often emotional dams ready to break. God can put up with a lot, This is why the Old Testament says of God being provoked to anger by his people dozens of times. But not once are we told that God is provoked to love or provoked to mercy. His anger requires provocation. His mercy is pent up, ready to gush forth. We tend to think divine anger is pent up, spring-loaded. In fact, divine mercy is slow to build. It is just the opposite. Divine mercy is ready to burst forth at the slightest prick. The whole idea is that we think that God is angry, ready to be provoked. To be angry, God has to be provoked. To love, it just flows out of him. He is love. Angering God takes work. Getting him to love us, he already is. He already loves us. This is his default nature towards us. He's slow to anger, and his steadfast love is abounding. And this is God's deepest heart. He longs to be in a relationship with us, longs to walk with us, longs to be patient with us. He has overflow of love he wants to lavish on us. God is slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. We see Jesus embody the patience of God. Jesus entrusted himself to the Heavenly Father, perfectly patient for the sinners who betray him, mock him, abuse him, and kill him, perfectly patient with the plan of God for the cross and the grave. And on the cross, we are given the full picture of God's heart for us. As Jesus, the Son of God, hangs on a tree, taking the full wrath of God that you and I deserve as his enemies, we see the most beautiful, compelling, overwhelming picture of what has always been true. God is slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. The cross confirms it. God's love, his patience, and his affection for sin and sinners. This is our God whom we're called to follow. And the more we follow, the more we are conformed into his image, the more this fruit takes place in us. And I say it in my own weakness, I can be reactive, impulsive, and want immediate results. I want it all and I want it now. And the contrast is God is patient. His patience creates time and space for growth, immaturity, change, and redemption. This is how God has always been and always worked towards sin and sinners. He gives us space. He forbears. And this is where our patience as a people begins. It's rooted in God's character. It's rooted in his patience towards us. We grow in patience when we realize how patient he has been with us. We make space for people when we realize how much space he gives to us. We have a disposition of grace and forgiveness when we realize God's disposition towards us. So this week, when your kids aren't behaving and you might be tempted to snap or withhold affection, before you react, I want you to ask a few questions. Why am I so irritated right now? Are my reactions motivated by love and commitment to my kids? Or are my current reaction motivated by my own self-interest? And parents, I'm not saying be indifferent and don't parent your kids. Obviously, your kids are disobedient. Deal with it. We love them. We care for them. What I am saying is patient parenting comes out of love and care, not frustration and irritation. When your spouse maybe forgets something for the umpteenth time and you're ready to belittle or withdraw from them before you react, ask the question, what does my irritation say about my heart posture towards my spouse? Is this how I want to be treated? Is my response motivated by love or retaliation? Am I doing what is best for my spouse or am I doing what's best for me? whatever it is, when someone this week prevents you from getting your way or accomplishing your task, and you want to rage, whether it's outward or inwardly, before you react, ask the question, what are ways that God has been patient, slow to anger, and abounding in love for me? We want to grow in patience, slow to irritation. And some of what we need to do is just stop and ask the questions, is my reaction, is it rooted in my own self-interest, or is it rooted in the interest of those around me? And we want love, love from God, and love for others to drive us out in patience. The reality is patience isn't formed overnight. It takes time, and the work of God's Spirit is in us. But let's continue to cultivate patience as we actively love those around us.